Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1016, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on July 24th of the year 2018. Well, obviously, as the title of the program indicates, we will be bringing up to date some stories and introducing some things that we have not dealt with, at least up to a point. Many of the topics of discussion will overlap what I guess, for lack of a better term, might be called online fascism, or at very least the use of the new technologies, social media, mobile phones, the internet at all, as vehicles for not only spreading fascist ideology per se, but as we will see, for manufacturing rumors or, quote, fake news, unquote, as it has been labeled, in order to not only drive people to the right, but in many cases to drive people to absolute mayhem. And we're going to update what is going on in India. We talked about Hindutva fascism in our last program, and we're going to take a look at how the WhatsApp social media device, by the way, developed by the Open Technology Fund, a derivative of the CIA, has been used in an insidious way by Modi's BJP to spread rumors, or really manufactured political ammunition as fake news, in order to inflame the Indian population and, among other things, to further the cause of the cow vigilantes that we looked at last week. We're going to begin by taking a look at a very alarming development, although a predictable development in Europe, and that is how fascists, although they don't use the term these days, are called far-rightists or populists or whatever. If Adolf Hitler came to power today, our media would refer to the German paleoconservative or the German far-right populist Adolf Hitler, whom critics accuse of pursuing an ultra-nationalist agenda. They would never say the Nazi Führer Adolf Hitler. They would intone, as I have indicated. Can't use real words. You have to fake things. And I think, up to a point, the spreading of fake news not only could be said to be a perhaps predictable legacy of the official lying that has been engaged in the West, well, not just the West, but in connection with fascism from the post-World War II period, when fascism was made out to be a freak occurrence, a few weirdos hypnotizing people and getting them to do violent things and wear funny-looking uniforms, and the profound links to the corridors, the most important corridors of finance and industry in the U.S., and to some of the most powerful and entrenched intellectual themes of eugenics and the, quote, mental hygiene movement, things that led directly to the Third Reich's extermination programs and that overlap some of the anti-immigrant sentiment that was extant in the 1930s and 1940s and that can be readily seen today. I think the use of mealy-mouthed language on the one hand and the official dissemination of Warren Commission-esque fake news, and there is no shortage of that in the U.S., has set the stage for the relativization of truth and fake news. One of the things that is a major ideological tenet in this country, and not just the U.S., but Britain and Europe as well, is that the far-right populism, read fascism, is being manufactured by Russia, that this comes from Russia. That is an example of basically characterizing an internal, powerful and internal political phenomenon as somehow introduced by an external threat, unquote. It is not an external threat. And the rise of fascism in this country and elsewhere is due to some very powerful influences. Russia and Vladimir Putin are not among them. We're going to begin taking a look at Austria in particular, also Austria and Italy, where the interior ministries have been taken over by, quote, far-right populists, read fascists. In particular, in Austria, the intelligence service, or there was a raid by Freedom Party members on the offices of and the homes of officials of their domestic intelligence service that is in the business of monitoring and theoretically at least neutralizing far-right activists. In turn, this has compromised the ability of that bureau to coordinate with and share information with the domestic intelligence services of other European countries, including the BFD, the Bundesamt für Forschungsschutz, the German Domestic Intelligence Agency, which is in charge with, theoretically at least, suppressing far-right extremism. And the interior minister of Austria is a Mr. Kickl, K-I-C-K-L, from the Freedom Party. And by way of underscoring how the rise of fascism in countries in Europe and the U.S. is not a freak occurrence and certainly does not come from Russia, we're going to take a look at some of the key officials and in the rise of the Freedom Party in Austria. I've spoken many times about the SS perpetuating itself in the post-World War II period and to an extent going underground, also to an extent remaining active above ground as well. The Freedom Party in Austria was formed by veterans of the Third Reich as a vehicle for reintroducing Austrian Third Reich veterans into the political process in Austria. And the first two party heads were both former SS officers, although really using the term former or ex is inappropriate. They were SS. It would be, frankly, a disservice to them to characterize them as ex-SS. By all available indicators, they remained true to their cause. The first was Anton, A-N-T-O-N, Reintaler, R-E-I-N-T-H-A-L-E-R, who joined the SS in December of 1938 and ultimately rose to the honorary rank of Brigadeführer or Major General. He was succeeded in his position as head of the Freedom Party following his death in 1958 by another SS officer named Friedrich Peter, P-E-T-E-R. Very quickly about this, by way of taking a look at what the Freedom Party really is and where it really comes from. It does not come from Russia. From Wikipedia, the entry for Anton Reintaler, again, A-N-T-O-N-R-E-I-N-T-H-A-L-L-E-R. He was appointed Undersecretary of State to the Reich Ministry of Food and Agriculture under his old friend, Walter Dare, and went on to fill a number of positions for the Nazi government, including Gauleiter of the Lower Danube Landvolk and head of the Regional Food Office and an honorary Brigadeführer or Major General in the SS. Having initially joined the SS in December of 1938 with the membership number 292,775, he achieved his highest rank on January 30th of 1941. Skipping down. Along with Rudolf Neumayer, N-E-U-M-A-Y-E-R, the finance minister, and Guido Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-B-T, the foreign minister under Schuschnigg, Reintaler was brought before the Austrian People's Court and accused of, quote, high treason against the Austrian people, unquote, with the three named defendants labeled as being those most responsible for the Anschluss the merging of Austria with Nazi Germany. The Anschluss, A-N-S-C-H-L-U-S-S, is the formal name given to the German annexation of Austria. So again, the first head of the Freedom Party was not only SS, but was accused as being one of the three Austrians most responsible for the Anschluss, for Austria's annexation to Hitler's Third Reich. More about the roots of the Freedom Party, now a coalition partner in Austria. This from the Nation magazine of December 29th, 2017, by Jordan Stancil, S-T-A-N-C-I-L. The far right is now in power in Austria. This reads, in part, the leader of the Freedom Party and the new vice chancellor of Austria, Heinz Christian Strache, S-T-R-A-C-H-E, has been photographed more than once participating in paramilitary exercises with banned Nazi groups. Newspapers in Munich and Vienna published these photos along with Strache's case-by-case denials, which usually amounted to vague explanations about paintball games, unquote, that he had not realized were, quote, political, unquote. Also, Strache was once arrested by police in Germany for marching with neo-Nazis there, and he participated in the shouting down of a performance of Thomas Bernhard's famous 1988 play, Heroes Square, which criticized Austria for its failure to deal with its Nazi past. The Freedom Party has long been at the center of this failure. Some media in the U.S., including the New York Times, have said that the party was founded by neo-Nazis. This is inaccurate. The party was founded by the original Nazis in the 1950s and led by Nazis until the 1980s. Technically, they were ex-Nazis, but the ex applies only because Hitler's Germany, of which Austria was a province, had been defeated. The first chairman of the party was Anton Reinthaler. He started as a Nazi activist opposed to Austria's First Republic after World War I, then became a member of the Reichstag after the country joined Nazi Germany in 1938. He went on to hold numerous high-level positions in Hitler's government, including in the cabinet. For this, he served a jail sentence under American occupation forces. Reinthaler died in 1958 and was succeeded as Freedom Party leader by Friedrich, F-R-I-E-D-R-I-C-H, Peter, P-E-T-E-R, another former Nazi Party member and an officer in the SS. Peter ran the party formally until 1978 and then played an informal role well into the 1980s. This is the political lineage of Vice Chancellor Strache. Well, again, something about the heritage of the Freedom Party. Its first two heads were members of the SS, and it was founded by Third Reich veterans, specifically as a vehicle for reintroducing Austrian veterans of the Third Reich back into the Austrian political process. An important article, albeit a tainted one, a predictably slanted one that comes from the Daily Beast, talks about what has happened in Austria with the Freedom Party, now a coalition, and with a Freedom Party official now in charge of the Interior Ministry in Austria. The same is true in Italy, and as we have noted in some of our discussions of Ukraine, Arsen Avakov and his deputy Vadim Troyan, the former commander of the Nazi Azov Battalion, are respectively the interior minister and the deputy interior minister in Ukraine. The interior ministers have much to do with the administration of countries' intelligence services. And as we will see, one of the things that happened in Austria was a raid on the headquarters of and on the homes of officials of members of the Austrian Intelligence Service, a domestic intelligence service that was in charge with monitoring and countering far-right extremism. In turn, this has caused problems of communication with other European intelligence services, and very possibly, I would guess, with the U.S. as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at SpitfireList.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Again, this is from the Daily Beast of June 26th of 2018 by Christopher Dickey, D-I-C-K-E-Y, Josephine Hewitt, H-U-E-T-L-I-N, and Bethany Allen Ibrahimian, E-B-R-A-H-I-M-I-A-N. It's titled, Nazi Sympathizers Pushing to Take Over Europe's Spy Agencies. A slow simmering scandal in Austria has brought into public view potentially disastrous divisions among Western intelligence agencies. As far-right politicians have joined coalition governments in Austria and Italy and taken ministerial positions in charge of security and law enforcement, concerns have grown among intelligence professionals that they will ignore or even encourage the threat of violent ultra-right extremists. The extreme right is now in charge of the interior ministries in both Vienna and Rome, putting conspicuous pressure on the intelligence services. In Austria, there have even been police raids on the homes and offices of top intelligence service staffers. Last sentence again. In Austria, there have even been police raids on the homes and offices of top intelligence staffers. And then after the usual, frankly, anti-Russian propaganda, we skip down and read. This is about ultra-nationalist leaders with authoritarian leanings hijacking the institutions of state that used to provide checks and balances. And nothing fuels that better than an external threat to one's existence as a national culture, with all that follows. Needless to say, Hitler perfected this, and other would-be authoritarians are doing likewise. This for a former U.S. official named Mike Carpenter. Actually, I'm not sure about Mike Carpenter. But the truth is that European countries really do need to come to grips with the unprecedented influx of refugees and immigrants of different ethnic and sectarian groupings and determine how to turn some away humanely and accept others without the country's own sense of identity and culture being eroded, unquote. 2 years ago, Patrick Calvar, C-A-L-V-A-R, the then head of France's General Directorate of Internal Security, or DGSI, warned a commission at the National Assembly in Paris that European society was at a tipping point after the January 2015 massacres at the Paris offices of the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo and at a kosher supermarket, the November 2015 carnage at Paris cafes and at the Bataclan concert hall and other incidents. And the problem was not just with Muslim terrorists, but with anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant extremists on what he called the ultra-right. Calvar's closed-door session with the parliamentary committee reportedly painted an extremely bleak picture. Quote, we are on the verge of a civil war, he said. His public testimony was hardly more optimistic. Quote, Europe is in great danger, Calvar said. Extremism is rising all over, and we, the Internal Security Services, are in the process of redeploying resources to focus on the ultra-right that is waiting for nothing but the confrontation. Also in 2016, German spy chief Hans-Georg Maaßen, M-A-A-S-S-E-N, warned that right-wing extremists in Germany were even now networking with similar groups across Europe. By the way, they have been for a long time. Just last weekend, 10 people were arrested in France under suspicion that they were planning attacks on mosques, radical Muslim leaders, and women wearing veils picked at random. Their website, called Guerre de France, or War for France, advocates preparation for the war to come, and not only against Muslims, but against Jews as well. Later on, we're going to hear an echo of this in some domestic American fascist propagandizing as well. Continuing. In Italy, far-right politician Matteo Salvini, S-A-L-V-I-N-I, now serves as head of Italy's Interior Ministry, which handles internal security and terrorism. Salvini, who assumed office on June 5th, previously has called for, quote, mass cleaning street by street, quarter by quarter, unquote, to get rid of migrants. One of his first acts as Interior Minister was to announce a census for the Roma minority, declaring that Roma, without Italian citizenship, would have to leave the country. Parenthetically, anti-Roma raids by the Azov Battalion's Corpus Civile, or National Dragina Militia, is something we talked about in For the Record 1014. Continuing. In Austria, the specific incident that has crystallized wider concern in the world of espionage and counter-espionage, as well as counter-terror, was a series of raids ordered by the far-right Interior Minister earlier this year on the offices of the professional domestic intelligence chief, whose organization had in the past conducted and coordinated with Germany its surveillance of right-wing extremists. Although there is no official confirmation, several reports indicate Germany has since quit sharing such sensitive information with Austria. And as one longtime security advisor to several French presidents told the Daily Beast, quote, the Austrian operation against the intelligence service by the Ministry of Interior has had impact on every other intelligence service in the West, unquote. It was seen as potentially the shape of things to come. Austria's far-right Freedom Party gained control of the Interior Ministry in December after the center-right party agreed to form a ruling coalition with the once scorned FPÖ. Founded in 1956, the FPÖ has a strong Nazi pedigree. Its first leader was a former SS officer, and the party has never really strayed far from its roots. The annual Ulrichsberg gathering for the, quote, reconciliation, unquote, of World War II veterans in the southern Austrian province of Carinthia was for a long time a nostalgia fest for former SS officers and other Nazi collaborators from across Europe. In recent years, a new generation of right-wing extremists have joined in, too. The golden days of Ulrichsberg featured the charismatic but self-destructive leader of Austria's far-right Freedom Party, or FPÖ, Jörg Haider, who gave an infamous speech in 1995 praising SS veterans as decent men of character, unquote, who, quote, stand by their convictions even in the strongest headwinds, unquote. To say otherwise, according to Hitler, to Haider, was to be, quote, politically correct, unquote. Haider was killed in a car crash in 2010, but the gathering in Ulrichsberg already had been canceled the year before because one of the organizers was caught trading Nazi memorabilia on the internet, a swastika and various medals, all advertised as being, quote, original and in excellent condition, unquote. By 2012, it was starting to make a comeback, however, and one participant is among the most notorious figures for the German-speaking neo-Nazi scene. Gottfried Kussel was twice imprisoned in Austria for Nazi revivalism, and his rotund body, it has to be said, is rather reminiscent of the late Hermann Göring's. The first time the FPÖ entered government in 2000, it caused a major continent-wide crisis. The European Union levied sanctions on Austria, and amid international pressure, Haider ceded the chancellorship to a less controversial figure. The sanctions were lifted only after the FPÖ demonstrated that it had met certain human rights standards. But the political winds have changed dramatically since then. The FPÖ joined the ruling coalition in December of 2017 after political star Sebastian Kurz revitalized Austria's failing center-right party by diluting far-right policies to make them more palatable for the general populace. When the FPÖ came in second, a coalition with Kurz's party seemed natural. And with far-right populist parties advancing across the continent, Europe was in no position to sanction Austria this time around. since December, the Freedom Party's Herbert Kickl, K-I-C-K-L, has been Austria's interior minister. Kickl, whose lean, grizzled face and wire-rimmed glasses make him look like a radical conspirator after central casting, used to write speeches and gags for Heiber. The former president of the Viennese Jewish community, Ariel Musikant, said in 2009 that Kickl's texts reminded him of Joseph Goebbels. In 2016, Kickl appeared at an extreme right congress dubbed Defenders of Europe, unquote. The attendees were a mix of pan-Germanist frat boy types who worked for the Freedom Party, new right bloggers with university degrees who call themselves identitarians, unquote, and editors from various German and Austrian alternative news outlets. One was a publishing company from Graz that described National Socialism, that is, Nazi ideology, as, quote, Europe's attempt to prove itself against international superpowers in the East and West, unquote. Kickl gave the keynote speech and told the crowd, quote, I see the audience that I wish for here better than in the parliament, unquote. Today, Kickl is often described as the mastermind, unquote, behind the electoral successes of the Freedom Party that allowed it to enter into a coalition government with the somewhat more mainstream Christian Democratic Party of Prime Minister Kurz, that's K-U-R-Z. As junior coalition partner, the Freedom Party now controls the defense, interior, and foreign ministries. Kurz has been credited by some with besting the far right by embracing its agenda, which is a dubious proposition when talking about a party that has never really shaken off its Nazi heritage. This sentence again. As junior coalition partner, the Freedom Party now controls the defense, interior, and foreign ministries. Kurz has been credited by some with besting the far right by embracing its agenda, which is a dubious proposition when talking about a party that has never really shaken off its Nazi heritage. Hackers discovered that the party's chairman, Johann Gudenus, G-U-D-E-N-U-S, who is not in the current government, once had the Facebook password Heil Heil, unquote. Skipping down. In March of this year, a police unit headed by a Freedom Party member raided the homes of four staffers and an office of the domestic intelligence agency known as the BVT, the Federal Bureau for the Protection of the Constitution and for Counterterrorism. The Bureau deals with, among other things, right-wing extremism. The raids were justified as part of an investigation into alleged corruption in the BVT. But this, quote, investigation, unquote, was based on dubious insider info, unquote, documents that contained embarrassing tales of sex parties and cliquishness, but hardly any legally relevant information about actual operations of the BVT. The material, supposedly written by a BVT employee, was first offered around to the press in Vienna a year ago, but no one was interested until Kickl took over the Interior Ministry. Since he took over, he has appeared intent on discrediting the BVT and replacing its leadership with people loyal to the Freedom Party. Peter Grigling, G-R-I-D-L-I-N-G, known as the stubborn but politically colorless head of the BVT for the last 10 years, was fired several days after the raids on the homes of officials and the offices of the BVT. He had been the object of a virulent campaign by the website Uncensuriert, that's UNZENSURIERT.AT, known as the Austrian Breitbart. The former editor-in-chief of Uncensuriert is now Kickl's communications director. Gribling, along with the intelligence chiefs Calvar in France and Massen in Germany, warned in 2016 about a dramatic rise, unquote, in right-wing extremism. Sibylle Geisler, who directed the BVT's operation watching right-wing extremism, wrote a report about Uncensuriert and the 2016 Defend Europe Conference mentioned earlier. Geisler reported that the Defend Europe Congress is a, quote, networking for the extreme right scene, unquote, and that Unsensoriert.at publishes content which is, quote, in part extremely xenophobic, unquote, and has, quote, anti-Semitic tendencies, unquote. Some of Geisler's files were taken in the police raids launched by Kickl this year and last month. She wrote in an email which was leaked to the Austrian weekly magazine Falter that she is now subject to a, quote, witch hunt, unquote, by the Interior Ministry, which prevents her from continuing to do her job effectively. The police raids were clumsy, but Kickl's Interior Ministry still appears to have succeeded in obstructing the surveillance of right-wing extremism in Austria. After the news went public, the German intelligence service, or the BfV, asked the Austrian service if the prosecutors had seized any of Germany's shared intelligence during the raids. The German Interior Ministry told the German left party politician Andrej Hunko, A-N-D-R-E-J-H-U-N-K-O, that if this is the case, then, quote, there needs to be a new inquiry about how cooperation with the BVT can be continued in the future, unquote. Austria and Germany also trade intel via international forums like the CTG, the Counterterrorism Group. In a more recent inquiry by Hunkel about the CTG, the German Interior Ministry confirmed that a foreign intelligence agency that passes on German intel to a third-party domestic or foreign without Germany's permission is a likely deal-breaker, but said that one concern about ceasing cooperation was that the leak or sharing with undesirable third parties could be made worse. Hunkel tells the Daily Beast that he is specifically concerned that Kickl and his people will be able to acquire intelligence about leftist activists who oppose right-wing extremism. Quote, it is unthinkable what would happen if secret information about anti-fascist activities falls into the hands of the extreme right via Austria's conservative far-right government, unquote. He adds, the same applies for Italy, above all with the neo-fascist Salvini. I know that the German intelligence has written reports on the sea rescuers, some of whom are left-wing activists. It is a big problem, and if the heirs of fascist parties and movements now control the intelligence services and can pursue these activists with this information. A few days after the BfV's request in March for more information about what the police took from the intelligence agency, Christian Pilnacek, P-I-L-N-A-C-E-K, the Secretary General of the Austrian Ministry of Justice, denied that any German intel was taken in the raids. But last week, Pimicek admitted that officers took a DVD labeled Fotos Ulrichsberg 2015, unquote, which came originally from the BfV, the Verfassungsschutz. The disc apparently shows which people took part at the 2015 Ulrichsberg gathering in Carinthia. Pimicek said that from the DVD's title, it was not clear that this was Germany's information, and he said that the DVD has now been returned to the BVT Extremism Department. But, of course, the police under Kickl may now know details about German sources and methods that they might not have known before. In the raid, the prosecutors also took data from the, quote, Neptune, unquote, network, which the BVT uses to communicate with other European intelligence agencies. In light of the BVT affair, opposition parties tried unsuccessfully to pass a motion of no confidence against Kickl. Quote, no sane intelligence service in the world will continue to share information with us, apart from maybe the weather forecast, said Jan Kramer, K-R-A-I-M-E-R, from the Social Democrats. BVT boss Peter Gridling, now reinstated, told the O1 Morgan Journal of the Morning News on Monday that without a doubt, cooperation with foreign intelligence has become difficult, unquote. So again, the Interior Ministry of Austria is under the Freedom Party's kickle, and they staged a raid on the offices of the BVT and homes of BVT officials. That is the Austrian Domestic Intelligence Service, charged with countering right-wing extremism. And this has apparently compromised not only intelligence that was given to them by foreign intelligence services with a similar province of activity, i.e. countering the extreme right, but also apparently they took data from the network which the BVT uses to communicate with other European intelligence services. That is very interesting as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
The media, one of the things that we spoke about in For the Record 1002 and 1003, dealing with the school shootings that have become epidemic in the U.S., and that we updated in For the Record program 1011, is that many of the mass shootings that we have been told about have been executed or allegedly executed by people with far-right political connections or influence. In many cases, they are exponents of the lone wolf liberalist resistance strategy that we spoke about in For the Record 888, and for which Glenn Greenwald ran legal interference when he was an attorney representing various neo-Nazi organizations or Nazi organizations. There was a shooting at a Maryland newspaper called the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, Maryland, and that was widely reported. But what was not widely reported is that the alleged shooter, a fellow named Jarrod, J-A-R-R-O-D, Ramos, R-A-M-O-S, has also been influenced by far-right politics. He has been influenced by the League of the South. That is one of the neo-Confederate organizations that looms large in the political associations of not only Edward Snowden, but Julian Assange and WikiLeaks as well. Both Snowden and Assange are political devotees of Ron Paul. Ron Paul, the Texas congressman, is an unabashed white supremacist, has been networking with David Duke for decades, and has strong links to the League of the South. That is a neo-Confederate organization that feels that the Confederacy was right to secede, that the South should secede again, and that slavery was justified. Ron Paul's chief, that the lead blogger for his 2012 campaign was a fellow named Jack Hunter, a former head of the League of the South. Hunter now works for Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son. The chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, Bruce Fine, was the first attorney for Edward Snowden and the attorney for the Snowden family. Snowden gave money to Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, and again, along with Julian Assange, is a devotee of Ron Paul. Ron Paul joined at the hip with the neo-Confederate movement and people from the League of the South. In addition to a theocratic neo-Confederate ideological tenet espoused by people from the League of the South, other influences on Jarrod Ramos were apparently a degree of misogynistic sentiment. He apparently was allegedly harassing a female acquaintance, and some of the publicity surrounding that appears to have had something to do with his radicalization. Also, Jarrod Ramos has been influenced by a violent anime film or cartoon, animated cartoon, called Berserk, B-E-R-S-E-R-K. The point being that when the shooting at the Capital Gazette took place, allegedly perpetrated by Jarrod Ramos, it was widely reported But as is the case with the Las Vegas shooting and Stephen Paddock, as is the case with the Parkland, Florida shooting, as is the case with the Santa Fe, Texas shooting, and as was the case with the Stockton Schoolyard massacre and also the Columbine shooting in 1999, the far-right affiliations and dalliances of the perpetrators or alleged perpetrators went largely unreported or unnoticed.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
An article about Jared Ramos appeared in Salon of July 22nd of 2018. This from the Salon magazine of July 22nd of 2018, an article by Jonathan Hudson, H-U-T-S-O-N, exclusive, Inside Accused Annapolis Shooters, Alt-Right Theology of Mass Murder. Skipping down after hearing about the shooting, the author writes, I was shocked when I realized that Ramos, whom a grand jury just indicted on 23 charges, including 5 counts of first-degree murder, had contacted me 2 years ago. He taunted me in response to the Capitol's March 2015 report about how I had helped law enforcement thwart a mass shooting threat made on Twitter against grade school kids and Jews in Kalispell, K-A-L-I-S-P-E-L-L, Montana, by a man named David J. Lemieux. What I learned about Ramos as I followed his Twitter trail reveals as strange a worldview as one could imagine informing a mass murder scenario. There are at least 2 main influences evident in Ramos's tweets. One is a worldview taken from the theocratic wing of the alt-right. The other comes from a violent anime subculture centered around a popular manga, anime, and film series titled Berserk. Taken together, they provide a Rosetta Stone that helps us to translate the significance of 2 religious visions in relation to each other as they existed in Ramos's mind. I have the bulk of the text for this article in the written description for the Record 1016, which will become available shortly, presently after the recording of the program. Again, I know nothing about this particular anime, but it is apparently quite violent, and some of the language that Ramos used apparently derives from some of the specific dialogue in that anime. And again, people can peruse that at length in the description for the show. However, due to the limitations of time, I'm going to skip down to some of the influence of a theocratic ideology that is held in common by some members of the neo-Confederate movement. Skipping down. I believe Ramos contacted me initially because the Capitol had reported on my connection to David Lemieux, a white nationalist who had retweeted threats of a possible mass shooting, and also because I was researching and writing about ties between a local politician named Michael Perutka, P-E-R-O-U-T-K-A, and a right-wing group called the League of the South. The League is a theocratic secessionist organization whose leader, Michael Hill, had called for the formation of death squads targeting journalists, elected officials, and other members of, quote, the elite, unquote. In his essay, A Bazooka in Every Pot, unquote, Hill described such an assassination campaign as part of, quote, fourth-generation warfare, unquote, a style of decentralized conflict that blurs the lines between war and politics, combatants, and civilians. Hill wrote, quote, to oversimplify, the primary targets will not be enemy soldiers. Instead, they will be political leaders, members of the hostile media, cultural icons, bureaucrats, and other of the managerial elite without whom the engines of tyranny don't run. That was not Hill's only overt call to violence. He followed up with another essay calling for young men of, quote, Christendom, unquote, to become citizen soldiers, unquote, to destroy the galloping tyranny, unquote, of our time. As for Perutka, he is a neo-Confederate theocrat who thinks that the wrong side won the Civil War and that our real national anthem is Dixie. He is also a former board member of the League of the South, which had endorsed his successful 2014 campaign for a seat on Maryland's Anne Arundel County Council, running as a Republican. This is the same league that helped organize the infamous Torchlight Unite the Right march in Charlottesville, Virginia, last summer. Over a period of nearly 7 years, Perutka is one of only two politicians whom Ramos tweeted about, the other being Donald Trump, who has repeatedly vilified journalists. Jared Ramos is not affiliated with any political party, and there is no evidence that he was politically motivated or that he acted on anyone's orders. I would say there is evidence that he was politically motivated. However, he did not act on anyone's orders. That is just the point of the leaderless resistance strategy. It uses the media, the internet, social media, to communicate its message, and simply sits back and allows lone wolf terrorists or murderers or whatever to carry out their activities. What Glenn Greenwald did as an attorney was to free up the exponents of this kind of thing from any civil liability for the mayhem committed by their adherents. On the other hand, as Salon's Paul Rosenberg has reported, Ramos was influenced by the rhetoric and ideology of the racist alt-right. And like Hill, Ramos showed bold belligerence toward managerial elites whom he viewed as enemies. And skipping down, justice and public safety require that we consider the context, including multiple influences and possible triggers, when a suspect faces mass murder charges. Therefore, it is fair and necessary to ask whether President Trump's demagoguery about journalists could trigger some lone nut to murder them. Sociologists call such a violent response to COVID rhetoric scripted violence, unquote, and, quote, heroes know which villains to kill, unquote. Followers thus don't require specific orders, but gather a sense of validation and righteousness in carrying out a violent campaign of societal purification against people designated as corrupting influences. Indeed, what the writer here, Mr. Hudson, has spelled out is the leaderless resistance strategy, although there may very well have been no orders as such or explicit direction as such given to Mr. Ramos, if indeed he committed the crimes of which he has been accused. However, again, the importance of leaderless resistance is that one need not give such orders. One disseminates the information, one disseminates the ideology, and the adherents then take it upon themselves to carry out the, quote, scripted violence, unquote. And again, it could not be stressed strongly enough that what Glenn Greenwald did, as we did, laid out in For the Record 888, is he freed up the exponents of leaderless resistance from civil liability for what they did. He was not defending against the criminalization of free speech, as he has claimed. It has nothing to do with criminalizing free speech. However, if, in fact, advocacy for violence can be demonstrated to have influenced someone who committed a violent act, then the advocate would face civil liability, in other words, civil penalties in a lawsuit as a result of that. Greenwald, however, ran fundamental and very important interference for leaderless resistance. And this is a long article. The entire article is available, almost all of the entire article is available in the written description for the Record 1016. And for the Record 1015, we spoke about the Hindutva fascism of Narendra Modi, whose BJP is a political front for the RSS, the Hindutva fascist or Hindutva or Hindu nationalist organization that murdered Mahatma Gandhi and that was fashioned after the black shirts of Benito Mussolini. We spoke about the growth of cow vigilantism in India, that is the perpetration of vigilante violence against people either who were eating beef or killing cows or who were rumored to have killed cows. And the generation of incendiary fake news is fundamental here. National Public Radio of July 18th of 2018, fake news turns deadly in India. This talks about how the Facebook WhatsApp app, by the way, as we looked at in For the Record 895, developed by the Open Technology Fund, which is a CIA derivative, has been used to spread deadly fake news, in this case talked about here by NPR, about an alleged child murderer. The BBC of May 10th of 2017, India's cow vigilantes hotel in the clear, talks about how a hotel that on Sundays held a dinner of chicken meat in part for employees of the hotel was rumored via social media apps to be engaging in a beef party, and cow vigilantes then showed up at the door of the hotel and people were beaten. I would note in this regard, the Indian Express website cited a member of the group saying that they had gathered there after reading about rumors of a beef party at the hotel on WhatsApp, allegedly sent by Jaipur's mayor. And Jaipur, the mayor of Jaipur, sent that on a media app that was basically available on a BJP cell, as discussed in the Indian Express of March 22nd of 2017. Beef rumors. Badri averted police watch mob beat us, say Jaipur hotel owner and manager. This by Hamza Khan, K-H-A-N, about that same, quote, beef party, unquote, hotel. However, hours after the incident, Jaipur Mayor Ashok Lahoti shared a message on a BJP media cell WhatsApp group saying the hotel had been sealed for, quote, feeding beef to cows, unquote. Again, using social media, in this case the BJP's social media network, to incite violence on false premises. More about this from Vice News from July 17th of 2018. India's fake news epidemic is killing people, and Modi's government has no plans to stop it. Skipping down. Yet Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has largely remained silent about the problem. This is by David Gilbert and Zeenat Sabarin. Again, Vice News, July 17th of this year, 2018. Beginning again. Yet Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has largely remained silent about the problem, and analysts say there's a reason for that. Much of the fake news now spreading like wildfire has been promoted, if not created, by some of Modi's most fervent supporters. While the media in India and elsewhere have focused on WhatsApp deaths, we have to realize that this is only a specific way in which fake news is being spread by right-wing Hindu supremacists, many of them closely linked to the ruling BJP and its parent body, the openly fascist RSS, Amrit Wilson, a writer and activist, told Vice News. WhatsApp told Vice News that it has offered to meet with the Indian government over the issue, but a source at the company with knowledge of its dealings say they have yet to receive a response. In the absence of a greater national response from the capital, local police forces are resorting to low-tech solutions like passing out flyers, using loudspeakers, and even hiring musicians to educate people about the dangers of fake news. And again, skipping down. Analysts in India say there is reason to believe that Modi's BJP party is behind much of the fear-based fake news being pushed on WhatsApp and other social media platforms. Modi's office did not respond to multiple requests for comment on this story. Recently, the main opposition party hit out at Modi for, quote, aiding and abetting, unquote, lynching links to rumors spread via WhatsApp. Quote, when the state gives the license to kill, unquote, with impunity and abdicates its solemn responsibility to uphold the rule of law, resulting in vigilantism, death, and merciless killings of innocent lives, then each one of us should castigate it, decry it, and question it. Abhishek Singhvi, S-I-N-G-H-V-I, spokesperson for the National Congress Party, told reporters. Facebook's struggles to track and effectively curb fake news are amplified on WhatsApp, where messages are encrypted so that even WhatsApp can't see their content. While it is one of the app's biggest selling points, the added layer of security makes it almost impossible for the company to track and remove fake news. In India, where many users are illiterate and don't have access to the wider internet, this means that WhatsApp rumors spread like wildfire. Again, as noted here, analysts in India said there is reason to believe that Modi's BJP party is behind much of the fear-based fake news being pushed on WhatsApp. And that is not just going on in India. We're going to conclude by Right Wing Watch, a story from Right Wing Watch of July 12th of 2018 by Kyle Mantilla, or Mantilla, M-A-N-T-Y-L-A. Liz Crokin, Trump confirmed the existence of a video showing Hillary Clinton torturing a child. Right-wing, quote, journalist, unquote, Liz Crokin appeared on Sheila Zelinsky's podcast earlier this week, where the two unhinged conspiracy theorists discussed Crokin's assertion that a video exists showing Hillary Clinton sexually abusing and torturing a child. Quote, I understand it was a video circulating on the dark web of Clinton eating the face of a child, Zelensky said. Does this video exist? Yes, responded Crokin. There are videos that prove that Hillary Clinton is involved in child sex trafficking and pedophilia. I have sources that have told me that. I trust these sources, so there is evidence that exists that proves that she is involved in this stuff. I believe with all my heart that this is true. After claiming that, quote, the deep state, unquote, targeted former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn for destruction because he and his son were, quote, exposing Pizzagate, unquote, Crokin insisted that media reports warning about the ability to use modern technology to create fake videos that make it appear as if famous people are saying or doing things are secretly part of an effort to prepare the public to dismiss the Clinton video when it is finally released. Based off of what lies they report, I can tell you what they're afraid of. The point of this being that it is not only in India where this is going on, it is in the U.S., and we have spoken in past programs about the technological ability of contemporary devices to create a very convincing fake video using people's faces and bodies in scenes that really did not take place, but that look very conventional. A form of technocratic fascism. And again, this is something that now is being pushed by Trump supporters. According to Liz Crokin, Donald Trump actually endorsed this particular allegation of hers. again, media now can be used to do those kinds of things. This is all we have time for. More detail about some of the stories that I have covered will be in the written description for the Record 1016. But this concludes For the Record 1016, miscellaneous articles and updates being recorded on July 24th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.